Did you know that Gazette print subscribers have full access to digital content at no extra cost? Activate your digital subscription now to enjoy the latest headlines, sports updates, and more at thegazette.com or through the Gazette mobile app. Read the page-by-page daily newspaper with the Green Gazette, perfect for on-the-go reading. Activate your subscription at thegazette.com/activate or call 319-398-8333.
How's it going, everyone? Jeff Johnson here from the Gazette, KJ Pilcher, Jeff Linder, another edition of the Prep Huddle Prep Football Podcast, where we are talking all things high school football. And we are now through week three, week four coming up. It's the quickest 9 weeks in the calendar year, right, boys? That's what they always say. So I can't believe we're already up to week four. So far so good with the weather for the most part, and you know, I think everybody or almost everybody starting district play or getting close to it, so that's always a very exciting exciting point in the season. How about we run through maybe some of the things that happened in week three, things of note. I don't know where you want to start. We always see it start in the big class, and I guess, boys, the one that kind of sticks out to me is Cedar Rapids Prairie losing to Bentendorf 14-11. We had the Hawks ranked 6th in 5A. They looked really good in the first 2 weeks of the season. Both games on the road, and then they come home for the home opener last week against Bentendorf, and I don't know if laying eggs the right way to put it, but certainly a pretty disappointing loss, I imagine, for everybody over there on the far southwest side, huh?
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. I was a little bit surprised that Prairie wasn't able to put up a little bit more offense than that.
Yeah, that's the thing that stood out to me is
go ahead, JJ.
Okay. I was just going to say, yeah, you know, from what I saw the week before, a big win over Cedar Rapids Kennedy was, you know, I really was very high on this team, and I still am. I think maybe sometimes this might be the best thing that happens to a team. You know, you kind of get talked about a lot, and, you know, maybe you read your own clippings, soldiers, as the old saying goes. But yeah, we'll see how Prairie responds, because it's got all it has to do this week is play against number one Waukee Northwest. So we'll see. We'll see a little bit maybe what the Hawks are made out of, I guess. So elsewhere in 5A, of note, I guess I was at Kingston Stadium. Waukee beat Cedar Rapids Kennedy 23-15. A lot of mistakes by the Cougars. I think it was close to 10 penalties, or it was 10 penalties, if I remember correctly. A game that, you know, Kennedy couldn't stop Waukee's rush game in the second half. And, you know, Waukee's a solid ball club, has a tight end, Evan Jacobson, that's going to Texas A&M. And Kennedy did a nice job against him. He only caught one ball, but really couldn't stop the run game there. Other games, Iowa City Liberty beats Linmar 28-7. Indianola over Cedar Rapids Jefferson 31-11. Waukee Northwest beats Iowa City High 49-13. Iowa City West continues its quick undefeated start at 3-0, beating Pleasant Valley 42-30. And around the state, Jeffrey, maybe the game that was the most interesting to me was probably Sioux City East and Sioux City Heelan, 42-41 East in double overtime. We knew the Heelan was a good smaller school program and team, and East, we still don't know. Honestly, I don't think just how good East is. We have them ranked obviously in the top 10, most people do, but that was an interesting score, I guess, right?
First of all, you know, back to East and Helan. I think that might end up being one of East's toughest games this season. What don't you like about them at this point?
Is it, well, the schedule? Is it just the season, honestly, anything?
I mean, you're right. Yeah.
When your best win is against a 3A school and it comes in double overtime, you know, and again, it's a lot of it's geography, right? As it always is with the bigger schools out there, because you know, you're always going to play the other two Sioux City schools in 5A, which aren't very good. Council Bluffs, same thing there. I probably should look at the district schedule.
We've got Ankeny, you know, in week five and Johnston in week seven. I think we'll know quite a bit more about the Black Raiders after those two games. Okay. Other than that, they really don't have too many. They don't have any other hard games remaining. So I would think their floor is probably 7-2, and I suppose their ceiling, I don't know, maybe it's 9-0. I don't know. If they go 9-0, I think we'll have to say they're pretty good. If they, you know, if that includes wins over Ankeny and Johnston.
How about 4A? I think the marquee game around here certainly was Cedar Rapids Xavier beating Clear Creek Amanda 54-21. It reversed a game from last season, which Clear Creek really kind of shocked Xavier, to be honest. And Pilchy, let's see, what do you think about that one, I guess?
Well, first off, I think the margin of victory surprised me a little bit. You know, I've been pretty high on Clear Creek Amanda, and I thought this would be a competitive game. And of course, they got out to an early lead. I believe Lindy was there.
It was 14-0 in a hurry.
Yeah, but the way Xavier came back and then just dominated from there on out, you know, I think there's still some kind of feeling of where Xavier was at as far as whether they were a number one caliber team in 4A or maybe a top five team. I think they really showed that they're a 1-2 team in the clutch for sure, no matter what now.
Jeff, you were there. You know, you must agree. I mean, this is a
team. Yeah, they gave up a long touchdown pass, and then they gave up they had a special teams mistake, and you know, it was 14-0 in a hurry, but it was pretty clear, you know, by within the next drive or two that the Xavier was the superior team in this one.
We look elsewhere in 4A. Decorum went over to the Rock Bowl in Dubuque and knocked off Dubuque Wallert in overtime 19-13. Nice win for the Vikings. First loss in over a year for Wallert, which was undefeated in 3A champ last year. So, and no rest for the weary, I guess, there with the Cora having Western Dubuque this week as well. KJ, Thursday night, you saw Washington, Cedar Rapids, Washington, play Clinton. And I guess you have to say that was a pretty disappointing loss for Cedar Rapids, Washington, losing to a Clinton team that really hasn't had a whole lot of success in recent seasons.
No, but that's you know, it was a game that they pretty much had. You know, they look back and you know, one drive never wins the game or anything like that. But you know, they had a couple really bad penalties on a drive right before half that led to a touchdown, and then they give up a big drive at the end of the fourth. Towards the end of the fourth, you know, and they end up losing 20-17. Missed a couple field goals, especially one right at the buzzer. You know, that is scaled a little right over time. But yeah, give credit to Clinton. They put together a heck of a drive there towards the end. Boy, I think they went like 13 plays or or something like that, and covered 70 some yards. Carter kid scored a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. Washington couldn't seem to stop the run at that point. But then they get a great return from Keegan Waters. They get the ball first and goal. I think maybe inside the 5, really inside the 10, maybe the 5 to 7 yard line, somewhere around there. And just couldn't, they went backwards on 2 or 3 straight plays. And then, field goal from opted to go outside instead of punting the ball up the middle. Eric Addy talked about that. He thought they were going to plug up the middle, so they tried to go to the perimeter, and that didn't work, and they lost yardage. Then they hit up a field goal from the left hash and missed it. A lot of mistakes there. Wash is 1-2, had that win over Jefferson to start, but, Ben, I hate to say anything, Nate, just been a little lackluster, I think, maybe the last 2 weeks.
So, Wash has Grinnell coming up.
Wash, go ahead. Who's Wash got this?
Grinnell on the road.
Well, I guess we'll get to that.
Yeah, okay. They got Grinnell on the road, then they've got very 4 good toughies.
Let's just move down to 3. I believe Xavier would be the first one, if I remember correctly. So, the big game, obviously, in Class 3A was the annual Solon-Mount Vernon game, and Solon coming out on top there, 35-20. And nothing that happens in that game, I guess, would necessarily be a surprise, but Solon's got some dudes offensively, I guess, guys, and really ran for a balanced attack. What, looking at 230 yards on the ground, 192 through the air. Eli Campman had over 300 yards rushing and passing. So he's having a great senior season, and big win for the Spartans.
Yeah, and it really was. Both teams have really good passing games, really good quarterbacks. I think Solon has stamped itself as a 3A contender, maybe a favorite, but I think that's going to be a good class coming down the stretch. We have Solon and Clear Lake co-number ones this week in our poll.
One of the things that I think kind of stands out too from the Mount Vernon side is, they've had some injuries here. Jaspers and Case and Curran, Chase Jaspers and Case and Curran both out to injuries in the Benton game. And, they only rushed the ball for 31 yards. And, some of that's for Solon's defense, or from Solon's defense. But also you could see that without those guys, only 31 yards from a pretty good offensive team. Those injuries certainly make a difference. And Colin Hammerback still had a good game throwing. Need to find somebody to plug in their run ball to help them out.
Elsewhere in the class, I guess of note, I look at West Delaware's off to a real nice start, guys, at 3-0. Beat Waukon 34-6. And you mentioned Clear Lake, Lindy, a really impressive 47-7 win over Webster City, which is always a good ball club. And the annual Benton County Clash went to Benton Community 42-0 over Vinton Shelsburg. So that was in Class 3A. Then we look at maybe some scores in Class 2A. Iowa City, Regina, and Elbernett, I guess, maybe would be the first game to talk about. Regina rolls here 59-27 in a big-time offensive game, and that came despite a kickoff return to start the game from Al Burnett. That went for a touchdown, right?
Yeah. You know, Al Burnett, Lake and Caves, boy, he's everything that has been touted about him. Very dynamic player. Returning the opening kickoff, about 92 yards for a touchdown. They go up 7-0 right away. Regina is able to kind of answer, ties it up at 7. But Al Burnett didn't go away early on. They took a 14-7 lead. Brady Kastner, the Hunter Fry for a 28-yard touchdown. Nice job by Kastner to kind of scramble and then kind of threw on the run and found Fry wide open. And you're like, oh, wow, there's some playmakers on this team. But there was a turning point. You know, I mentioned already, one play doesn't win a game, but it certainly could be a factor, right? So it's 14-14 with, I think, under 5 minutes to go in the second quarter. Al Burnett's on its own 38 and facing fourth and inches. And Regina stops him. Takes over the 38. Then they end up getting a touchdown off that drive. I think Al Burnett presses a little bit, trying to get something in the final minutes and maybe tie things up, throws an interception. Regina turns that into a touchdown. That one might have been a crazy pass to Will Litton. And then the very next drive, nice pass, really good throw by Kastner, goes through a receiver's hands and right into the midst of Edwin Gangba. Again, another turnover, another short field. I think they return that to the 20 or so. And Regina puts that in the point. So lickety split, Regina gets a stop and then puts up 21 unmatched points before the end of the half. So that really broke the game open. And it was that defensive stop that, on fourth down, forced a turnover on downs that seemed to kind of swing things in Regina's favor, and they didn't look back after that. But I think Al Burnett's still a really good team, obviously, with Caves and a couple other guys. They have some playmakers. I think their defense – I think they have some tough kids up front. I think there's some grittiness and some toughness to them. And I think that'll serve them well in the games going forward. So – still expect some good things from Burnett. The one thing I will point out, Kyle Tracy, he really demonstrated his ability to throw the ball and run the ball. Threw for 206 yards and a touchdown. Ran for 132, and I think he might have scored another touchdown running as well. He's a dual threat. I know that's a cliche and gets thrown around a lot, but Tracy's definitely a dual threat. When you have some other weapons there, that makes Regina really, really dangerous.
You look at a Class 1A now as we move down, we scroll down here, and Class A, I guess, too, in this case. Jeff, I know you've been very high. We all have on Maquoketa Valley, and unfortunately had the injury to the quarterback Brady Wall, which kind of was a factor last week or 2 weeks ago in a loss to North Lynn. Boy, did the Wildcats really rebound with a very nice win over Dyersville Beckman this week, 17-7. And that was one up front. I think Maquoketa Valley ran for over 200 yards and limited Beckman to, I think, 60-something. So I guess Maquoketa Valley proved that, okay, even though our really good quarterbacks out there, that we're – boys, we can still play, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really nice bounce back win for them against a very good 1A program. I think Beckman's going to do a lot of good things this year. Just kind of looking to see who Maquoketa Valley's got coming up. They've got East Marshall on the road. East Marshall's better this year than they've been, and then they've got Wapsie Valley at home the week after that. That will be probably a top 10 pivotal game in that district.
East Marshall and Maquoketa Valley, huh?
How district that rivals.
That is a long district rivals.
Long time district, long time arch rivals. heated rivalry that goes back weeks.
Yeah, and North Lynn just played East Marshall, right?
Yeah, yep.
If I remember right, this past week. Yeah, so East Marshall's got to be going, what did we do to you know, peeve off the IHSAA, and they're making us go way east to play our district games. But
I just don't think there are very many. It. I don't think there are a whole lot of Class A teams in that area. I think they're either eight player or maybe a little bit bigger. You've got the Sickle teams down to the south there that I suppose they could have gone with, but the Linville Sullies and BGMs and some of those, but I guess that's just how it broke this year.
And East Marshall has not been a Class A team very long, I don't think. I remember them being like 2A, I want to say. LeGrand, yeah. LDF, Semco. So declining enrollment there. We mentioned North Lynn going to 3-0 with the 28-13 win over East Marshall. And Lindy, I'm going to have you effort this. When do North Lynn and Maquoketa Valley play? Because
that was the 16-0 game.
Yeah, that was
2 weeks ago. Right. Okay, never mind. Jeepers creepers. It's old age, folks.
No, that's okay. You asked me to answer it, and I did.
You did right away. I appreciate that. Other Class A, I mean, the top two teams just kind of keep rolling. St. Ansgar and West Hancock, and I don't know anything around area.
Let's talk about 3-0 Midland, and let's talk about 3-0 Clayton Ridge, because we haven't gotten to do that for a while.
That's a great idea. Midland went to 3-0 with a 36-20 win over East Buchanan, and it is a really quite a story over there in Wyoming. That's Wyoming, Iowa, not Wyoming, the state. Midland was the last time Midland was an 11 player program was, I believe, 2010.
Wow.
And they went to 8 player from there.
They had some good years in 8 player.
Yes, absolutely. Had some good 8-9 win teams, if I remember correctly. And enrollment, you know, the vagaries of the whole enrollment and where whether you could play 8-man or 11-man. Midland fell on the 11-man side or 11-player side this season. And that has got to be an incredible adjustment. And I'm sure it was, and it is. But, 3-0 is 3-0. Looking at the stats here, Anthony Harrington has kind of been, I think, the main mover for Midland. He's the quarterback. He threw for 108 last week and ran for 197. So
he's a good all-around.
I mean, that's your old conference. Yeah, that's your old good conference, Jeffrey, as a North Cedar guy.
Or hail the old Mideast.
Lincoln community guy.
Yeah.
But that is a great story, right?
Yeah. I think when I didn't play football in high school, but I remember that they were one of those schools that their football field and their baseball field overlapped. So part of the field was in dirt. And when it rained over there, that was always fun.
So one of the interesting things with Midland, last year in 8 player, guess how many times they scored over 30 points in a game?
Last year?
Yeah.
I'd say one. They weren't very good last year.
They did not have a good record, so I'm going out and saying
they scored over 30 points twice. Both in losses.
Okay.
This year in their first 3 games back in 11 man, they're averaging 31 points a game and only giving up a little over 12 points a game. So, that's fantastic. You usually don't probably move from 8 player to 11 player and get, this outburst of offense, but you know, Harrington, you mentioned Harrington. He's a great all-around athlete. Pretty sure he was an all-stater in baseball. I think he wrestles as well. You know, when you have a leader like that, it kind of helps bring some other guys along. But they certainly have benefited or have gotten better from a year ago, I guess, and it's shown here early on. But things are going to get a lot tougher because some of the teams that we've mentioned in that district, Wapsie Valley this week, I think Maquoketa Valley in 2 weeks, and maybe Northland, those are three next opponents or three of the next four. So it's going to get a lot tougher for Midland going forward. It'll be interesting to see how they step up to those challenges.
They probably don't have to beat any of those three if they can beat East Marshall to get into the playoffs.
Really? That'll put them in the top four?
I think, yeah. It'd be because they already beat East Buck. North Cedar, yeah. So it'd probably that East Marshall game would be the one that would determine the fifth team in that district. So anyway,
and then we talked about Clayton Ridge, as Jeff mentioned, another good story here early in the season, a 3-0 record, a 40-0 win over Postville last week. I'm looking down the wins totals here, starting with last year, 3-2-1-2-3-3-0-3-3. So you kind of get the point here. Clayton Ridge has not experienced a whole lot of success in the last, 10 years or so. But this team is certainly off to a great start at 3-0. Again, kind of like Midland, maybe the schedule hasn't been the toughest, but so what? I mean, you got to win games, and certainly, the Eagles are winning games and playing good defense. I think, two shutouts, right? Maybe in the first 3 weeks. So, good on Clayton Ridge.
And their schedule ramps up in week five, somewhat with Southwind, North Butler in week six. Those are kind of swing games, maybe. And then they close with St. Ansgar, Nashville Plainfield. So the meat of their schedule comes late.
And if you've ever been to Guttenberg, Clayton Ridge High School is literally right next to the Mississippi River, which is kind of cool. Actually, I think you can kind of go out back of the school, and right there is the Mississippi River. And if you fumble and stumble, you might fall into it. So
it's a really pretty cool place to watch a game. So
have you been there before, Jeff?
Yeah, they used to be in our conference when they were still Guttenberg.
Oh, that's right. That's right. There's another one. So
that was a long trip.
Yes. While we're up there in Clayton County, let's give a shout out to Elkader Central, right? Yeah. I know they want to go by Central Elkader, but we call them Elkader Central. That's just our style. Another team that's undefeated, and this is an 8-player 42-14 win over Calamus Wheatland last week. And, Central has put up some points, 74 in the opener against West Central, 66 in the second game against Central City, and 42 last week against Calamus Wheatland. So there's some special things going on up there in Clayton County, huh?
Yeah. They've got Key High this week. So that's, I'd say that's probably a win. Springville next week at home, that's going to be a lot tougher. Cedar Ridge Christian week six. And then they close Easton Valley and Edco.
And you look at, again, a program without really much of any success, starting in 2017, won two games. The next year, one, zero in 2019. One win in 2020, two wins in 2021. Didn't have a team in 2022. Not enough kids wanted to play. Didn't win a game in 23. Went 3-5 last season. So good on the boys up there in Elkader. No doubt about that.
What one of you guys might remember this better than me, but weren't they the team that broke a long winning streak by Don Bosco in the regular season? And then Don Bosco beat him, came back and beat him in the playoffs. Is that correct? It's been a few years. Boy,
you guys.
That rings a bell.
You got a better memory than I do.
Well, I remember weird things.
No, it's good. It's good. Elsewhere, an A player, I guess, real quick. Anything of note? Edco, 64-14 over Keihai. Springville's got to be the best, what, 0-4 team in the state, right? 46-40 loss to Easton Valley.
That's a good team. Springville's a good team. Yeah. And they've just been the victim of losing some close games to other good teams. And, you know, the schedule's going to even out for them a little bit. And I still wouldn't be surprised if that's a team that's making some noise at some point before the season's over.
So, hey, I just want to follow up on the Don Bosco. In 2016, Alcater Central handed Don Bosco its first 8-player loss. And then Don Bosco came back. And then Don Bosco came back and beat them at the beginning of November in the postseason.
Wow. That's good intel. Very good intel. So we thought we would run by we do something called four downs every week, and KJ Pilcher is his idea, and he does a great job compiling everything and giving questions to me, KJ, Jeff, and Scott Unish, our friend from CRM Live Sports, who's out and about and does high school fun online every week. So I thought we'd just run through the questions this week. You can always read this at thegazette.com or pick up a copy of the Gazette, I guess, as well. So
Wednesday edition.
So four questions. The first question, first and 10 this week, was what 3-0 or 4-0 team has been the most impressive? And your answers, we'll start with Jeff on this one.
I got to look back at it. You tell me what my answer was.
Well,
I answered Northwest. Yep. And let's see. Go ahead and help me out here.
Alcater Central. You had Alcater Central up there.
All right.
So I think you nailed that one. I said West Lyon just because, and you know, I mean, that team's going to contend for a state championship every year. I mean, it's just that great of a program up there. But West Lyon has beaten its three opponents by a combined score of 115-0. And you can't get much better than that. and then the other one that I mentioned was Carroll Kemper, which is also 3-0. Beat a good Cherokee team, which I think we have ranked in a lower class, 1A maybe, by 16 points. And then smacked Algona 52-21. And Algona was the top, number two, I think.
Behind Mount Vernon.
Yeah, when we had him behind Mount Vernon. So those were my two things. Pilchy, what do you remember what you got there?
Yeah. Iowa in our area, Iowa Valley and West Delaware. You know, the Tigers are just taking care of business all season, pretty much. They've got wins over Don Bosco. Just beating Mizuma. I still think Springville is a quality program, even though they don't have the wins to show for it. And Iowa Valley beat them to open the season. I think they ranked fifth in points per game and 8-player. West Delaware's 3-0. That's a team that's really stood out to me. Their defense is one of the tops in 3A. They only give up like 4 points a game. Now, their schedule is going to get a little tougher with Waller this week, but they have them at home. Then state-wise, I agree with Lindy, Waukee Northwest. They've beaten Ankeny Centennial, West Des Moines Valley, dominant against City High. So it'll be fun to watch how they perform at Prairie this week. And then North Polk. I know we've talked about this a couple times, but that was a team that I kind of abandoned at the beginning of the season because I saw what they grabbed, who led them last year, and those guys aren't there anymore.
Yep.
So I just assumed maybe a rebuilding year there at North Alamon. But they've come out, they beat Lewis Central, even though Lewis Central is 1-2 now. That was a team that I thought was going to be towards the top of 4A. Newton's had a good year, and they ranked, and they beat Newton, and then ADM, they beat ADM again, another ranked foe. They're 3-0, and almost look like they picked up where they left off a year ago.
That leads into our second question. Our second down question was, what was the best week three performance, individual or team? And Lindy, you and I agreed on this. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about
that. Yeah, when we were talking eight man, we probably neglected to talk about this, but yeah. You know what Nolan Kriegel did and what Nolan Kriegel continues to do. Yeah, he's been great. 353 rushing yards, 9 touchdowns, and what more do you say? I mean, he was the show, and Iowa Valley's really good.
Also, 3 2-point conversions. So I don't know how many points that adds up to, but a lot. And 60. There you go.
60 points.
83-64. How would you like to keep score for that game, huh? You know?
Or that's a long stats. Box score.
Very much.
Purple tunnel.
Yes. Yes. Bilchi, you went with somebody you saw play in person Friday night.
Yeah. Well, see, just to preface this, I compile everything, so I see what you guys answer. So this one, I would have gone with Nolan Kriegel as well, but I just wanted to throw in a variety in there. And I watched I watched Kyle Tracy put up 329 total yards against what I think is going to be a really good Auburnette defense. He passed for 206 yards, threw for 4 touchdowns. As we mentioned before, 59-27. But it was more than the stats. There were times where things broke down or guys were covered, and Tracy was able to make the decision to tuck it and run, scramble, make things happen kind of outside the boundaries of the play that was called and make something out of nothing a couple times. Right there, that was impressive to me. So that was a really good individual performance that I got to see up close. It was a little bit more than just the stats there. And then team-wise, Solon's win over Mount Vernon, the fact that they put up 35 points, and this has been a really offensive team through the first 3 weeks. Wins over Assumption, Williamsburg, and Mount Vernon, and boy, Solon's riding high right now.
Our third down question, third and short, was submitted actually on X.com by achrist70. So thank you for that. Asked what our favorite fields are in the area. Jeff, you want to start us off there?
I'm partial to fields that have grass instead of turf.
I agree.
The atmosphere at Manchester is really cool. It's kind of an intimate setting because they don't have a track, so everything's a little bit closer to the field than it is at most stadiums. You know, just the brick stuff at the south end of the stadium, the entrances, I just think is really neat. Also mentioned Lisbon. I really don't like looking into the sun and being on the east side, but boy, when the sun goes down and the sky, you know, with the sunset and everything, it's really pretty at Lisbon.
Hey, speaking of looking in the sun, and we're talking about fields, do you remember how bad Armstrong Field was at Lindmar?
Yeah.
When it came to that sun, it was like, oh my God. Even the people, even the announcers, Cantini, who was still announcing at Lindmar after all these years. I remember he would struggle sometimes with his spotter to figure out who is running the ball or what just happened. So,
yeah.
And you get that at Xavier.
Yep.
Yeah. Still at Saints Field. So Pilchi, you had a few as well that I liked and agreed with.
Yep. I think we both like Kingston. There's some sentimental value there at Kingston. Being former Wash grads, that's where our home games were at. You know, there's just a mystique there with Kingston, the history. I think UNASH referred to it as the old gray lady, which I think I've heard before, but I think is pretty cool. You know, there's a simplicity and a mystique to it that makes it still one of my favorites. And having been on the grass there to play games, and it's just a really neat venue. You know, I was looking out at Regina, and you know, there's kind of a backdrop of trees there where it's at. You have the baseball and softball diamond kind of in the background as well, in a practice field. It's like a really intimate setting there at Regina, and I like that. And then Williamsburg's Bob Murphy Stadium.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why, but it's just kind of a neat deal. They've made some renovations where they put turf in. They changed the lighting. It used to be that yellow, real dull yellow lighting, and now it's a lot better and easier to kind of see. You know, they've got a different entrance now that you walk down. It's kind of a neat setup. So I like those. Oh, and I like Marion's because it's new, kind of like Linmar and Liberty, but it's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more intimate there with all the bells and whistles yet. So that's just a few that I kind of like.
I will say this. I don't know if either of you have been to West Liberty yet.
No,
it's great. It's really good.
Pilchy, I think with Williamsburg too, it's the pine trees, right? Around the field.
Yep.
You know, that's pretty cool to me, 100%. So, and you know, I said as well, Kingston Stadium, I mean, geez, growing up, you know, I remember being a kid in the 70s and, you know, going to games out there with my uncle and my cousin. And there's just that mystique about it to me. Obviously, you talk about Linmar and Liberty, which have, you know, massive new beautiful stadiums. And then I mentioned one. I don't know if I necessarily liked it. I sure didn't like covering games there. But there was just something about it, that old Mount Vernon field right behind the – what was it, elementary school or old – the old junior high school? I can't remember which
one. Yeah, I think it might have been an old.
I mean, you couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a mile walk away from anywhere. I mean, if you're covering a game there, you better bring comfortable shoes because you're walking.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. And I know you guys all remember the press box was just tiny and it kind of leaned and you never knew if it was gonna fall down.
And I think you're at about the 20-yard line on the west side instead of being at the 50.
But, you know, I just remember covering a Solon-Mount Vernon game when Jim Bellamy and Ed Hansen were still coaching. And I knew there was no room in the press box. I already kind of been told that. So I kind of meandered up on a grass hill behind the Mount Vernon section and just kind of watched the game there. And I could just remember, you remember Jeff Schwiebert, the old assistant coach. And I think he led Mount Vernon to a state baseball championship back in the day. I just remember that's where the assistant coaches, they didn't have, you know, press boxes for the assistant coaches, but they'd have headsets on. And I just remember, you know, kind of standing and Schwiebert would come over and he'd be talking to Bellamy, you know, and as we were on this hill, on this grass hill. So, I don't know. It's just kind of memories like that. You could not shoehorn a football field into a smaller area than what that was. I mean, literally, you're kicking extra points going into the street, you know, things like that. So that's just, you know, I hope you all enjoyed the, you know, us kind of reminiscing kind of some of the stadiums. That was a great question, KJ. So, fourth and goal, best high school football movie. And there are a ton out there. We all know what they are. Remember the Titans, KJ mentioned, Varsity Blues, Friday Night Lights, other things. I will – Jeff, you and I kind of – yeah. You and I kind of were similar on one of ours. So I'll let you do – you had a couple on there that you
really – Yeah, liked. Remember the Titans was great. You know, that was kind of a tearjerker. we both mentioned all the right moves.
Yep.
Not a Tom Cruise fan by any means, but that was a good movie. And
you know, certainly we're all Leah Thompson fans, that's for sure.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mentioned that. just Craig T. Nelson being kind of a knob coach, and I wonder what his goofy assistant from the coach series would have been yelling at him for not taking a safety late in that game.
62 stack monster, 62 stack monster. Remember that?
Yeah.
That part of it. So I also mentioned just in a goofy way, I don't know what it was, but Wildcats from Goldie Hawn was a nonsensical comedy.
Yeah, it was a bad movie.
I know, but there's something with it that just makes me smile, I guess. And that's, to me, that's part of what movies should be about. That's entertainment, right?
It was a prelude to White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah, yeah.
Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes were both in Wildcats, right?
Yeah, there you go.
It was set in the stage for a great basketball movie, actually.
And what, you guys remember the one with Kurt Russell and Robin Williams?
I almost put that. I think it's called The Best of Times.
There we go. There we go. Where they all relive their old high school days.
And they're playing against their old high school rivals, and they're all in their 50s and past their prime. And Robin Williams was and never was. And Kurt Russell's trying to get him to get to the point where he set him up to be the hero. And yeah, that's a good one.
But you had another one other than Remember the Titans, Pilchy.
Oh, I was just trying to be silly, especially, Johnny B. Good. Do you remember that with Anthony
Michael Hall? That was bad too.
Yes. That was, Anthony Michael Hall is the number one quarterback in the country. It fits, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. You know, the thing that always killed me about that was the over-exaggerated recruiting violations thing, where he was visiting the one school and they literally had like almost like a candy bin for different steroids that people were walking by and just taking handfuls out of to go work out. And they're like, we got everything you need right here, Johnny. And, you know, stuff like that. And it was just a dumb, silly movie. And I threw that in there because, of course, a great passing combo is going to be Anthony Michael Hall and Robert Downey Jr. of all people.
All right. Why don't we just, before we sign off, just where's everybody going to be this week?
Well, right now I'm still planning on going to Johnston. That might change here within the next hour with some things or within the next day or so. But right now I'm planning to go to Johnston. I'm really excited for the possibility of seeing Liberty and Johnson go at it there in Central Iowa. So top 10 matchup. Can't remember what Johnston is in our poll this week. Probably the back half of the top 10. Does that sound right, Lindy?
Yeah, I think Johnson's number eight.
Eight. So, yeah. And Liberty's right up there, top two or three. So looking forward to that one out in Johnston.
Let's see. JJ, we lost JJ. He's going to be out at John Wall Field. He's got Waukee Northwest and Prairie. I'm going to be at Van Horn. I've got Solon and Benton Community. And just some other games that we're covering out and about. Ryan Plagenkuehl's got Urbandale at Jefferson at the Old Gray Lady, I think JJ called it.
Yep.
Condon's got Kennedy and Linmar, and Douglas Miles has Xavier at Williamsburg. So any final thoughts before we shut this puppy down.
Just thinking of a couple other games, you know, we talked about Midland facing Wapsie Valley. That'll definitely be a good gauge of how good this Midland team really is. And then I think Decorah and Western Dubuque. I think that's a game that's really going to stand out. Wish it was a little bit closer. You know, but that one and Dubuque Waller and West Delaware, I think, be highlights for this week.
All right. Well, I think we'll call it a week for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening in, watching in. And for JJ, for KJ, this is Jeff Linder, and we'll see you next week.
Keep your head on a swivel.